This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX in association with StadiumScene.tv and Radio Football. Download the Radio Football app for 24/7 audio content. It's absolutely immense. There are so many podcasts on there. It's unbelievable. So if you want to binge on football podcasts, Radio Football app is for you. Now I'm your host, Stel, and I have three co-hosts this evening. First of all, it's Mr. Yannick's somber mood, Jay. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Could be bad, could be a City fan, could be happy.
You'd rather be a City fan?
No, I said I could be a City fan and then be happy.
Okay. Moving on, co-host number two is none other than Paddy Power brand ambassador, Mr. Rodri Giggs. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, hi, pal.
Yeah. Good. Good to hear, mate. Good to hear. You were telling us earlier that you played in a game and it didn't go too well.
Yeah, can't believe it. Bad result. Don't know what, yeah, terrible.
There weren't any Taibbi moments, were there?
No.
Was the herring go wrong?
De Gea. No, the hand of the hand of the Queen.
Great stuff. Right, our third and final co-host is the returning Michael Finley. Michael, how are you doing, mate?
Really good. Good to see or hear all of you.
Yeah, likewise, mate. Likewise. Well, for those of you who don't know, Saturday saw the inaugural match of the Canadian Premier League and it ended York 9 FC 1, Forge FC 1. Michael, over 17,000 fans attended the Tim Hortons Field. There's two very good goals, especially from Cadel Thomas. It's a great start to the league, isn't it? You must be thrilled.
Yeah, no, we're very pleased, excited. As my dad said to me while he was watching on television, it looked like proper football. So when you get that sort of feedback, you know, that's the exciting part, is that the look of the whole situation fits to what the plan is. I think people were relatively impressed with the quality and maybe a little bit higher than they expected. And obviously a turnout in the inaugural game, nationally broadcast on our national television station that nobody actually watches, sometimes CBC, but when there's football on, they seem to watch it. Everyone's very, very pleased so far.
That's good to hear. So when's the next round of games?
Sunday, actually, Pacific FC played the Halifax Wanderers at home in Langford, British Columbia. And that was a 1-0 victory for Pacific FC. They had 5,100 there, which is a full capacity for their ground. So, again, a really exciting period of time. Away games are a little bit different here. I was at the Hamilton, in Hamilton, for the Forge York game on Saturday, and then flew 5 hours to get to the game Pacific the next morning. So it's certainly not a bus trip. If you know what I mean,
you're clocking up those air miles, mate. I hope you get something back.
No, that's it. I need to be bumped.
So. Business class, isn't it?
that's what we all strive for.
Those are the levels that we need to achieve.
No, really good and exciting. And I think as people start to gain some interest, I think you'll see more and more people sort of taking a much deeper look at the depth of talent, and hopefully over a period of time, the youthfulness will start to appear within the league, and it can help deliver exactly what we're looking for, which is this sort of transitional environment for our players, which we've never had before.
Well, this is it. You're actually getting attendances that are higher than the old NASL attendances, and for a league that's just started, I mean, 17,000 people for an opening game is pretty impressive when you think about, you know, it's not a two stellar teams.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, there's obviously through the marketing of the league, There was some tickets that were distributed to, you know, to partners, and so there was some freebies, obviously, in the crowd. But the enthusiasm of the crowd that was there was certainly not a manufactured enthusiasm. It was actually an interest, and some of the work that's been done behind the scenes to make sure that this is presented as best possible from a quality point of view. I think the fan themselves really enjoyed it. I mean, it was something that you know, everybody involved was focused on hoping to present. It was a good product, taking into account exactly what level of competency we're talking about here. So,
excellent. Well, start as you mean to go on, as they say.
True fact.
There you go. Well, from Canada, we move all the way to the United Kingdom, where we currently reside, apart from Mike, obviously. And we begin with a race for the remaining two Champs League places, although given recent results of the four competing teams, it would appear that no one actually wants to play in the world's best club competition next season. Spurs warmed up for their Champions League semi-final with their first home defeat at the to-be-announced new name stadium. Mikel Antonio's winner was the first goal Spurs have conceded at their new home, and to be fair, West Ham deserved the points. Now, Jan, Manuel Pellegrini praised his players for their work rate off the ball. It's been a bit of an up-and-down season for the Hammers, but to be fair, mate, their performance at the weekend shows what they're really capable of.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. It was probably the best I've seen West Ham play all season collectively as a team. They thoroughly deserved the points. They went to White Hart Lane with a game plan. They stuck to the game plan. They were good on the counter-attack, especially with Felipe Anderson. Solid in midfield. And Diop had one of the best games I've seen, a centre-half. You know, people talk about Van Dijk, etc. But this guy at West Ham, he looks a real defender, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's good on the ball. He's solid. He puts his neck in. He defends, puts his head in. He's a proper defender. And West Ham would do well to keep him over the next few years, because I could see him probably moving to a bigger club. No disrespect to West Ham, but it just shows as well that if Pellegrini had all these players to his disposal this season, they've had a lot of injuries. West Ham could have achieved a lot more. And considering the issues with the stadium over the years, and you know, the change of managers, he's come in this year, and I think he's done all right considering everything, you know, that's gone through that club with injuries, etc. I think he's done really well. And like I said on Saturday, they thoroughly deserved the points. Tottenham were off the pace. Maybe all the games kind of, you know, caught up with them, and maybe they had one eye on the Champions League, which is understandable. But, you know, overall, West Ham did deserve the points. And they're a bit of a party pooper, West Ham. They're the first team to beat Arsenal at the Emirates, and now they were the first team to beat Tottenham. And that's a good stat to have, I guess.
That's right. And, you know, that Issa Diop, he had a fantastic game. I know he had that marauding run at the end. For a guy that's 22 years old, came in at £22 million from Toulouse, a lot of people were like, oh, who's this guy? But he could be a regular in the French national team if he plays his cards right, no?
Is that for me, mate?
Well, I haven't said anyone else's name, so I presume.
Oh. Yeah, like I said, mate, every time I've seen him, he seems to be getting better and better. And don't forget, with these players that come into the Premiership, everybody needs a bit of time to settle. And, you know, West Ham naturally are always going to concede goals. So, you know, he's got the stability right there. He seems to have found a partnership with Valbuena as well, which seems to work. Do you know what? Going away from Diop as well, I thought Mike Noble had a blinding game on Saturday as well. He really controlled that midfield, which him and Declan Rice, which allowed the defence to push on West Ham and gave Tottenham not a lot of chances as well. So, like we said, collectively West Ham were good, but Diop especially, I thought he was really impressive.
Superb. Michael, Pochettino told the BBC at full time, "The stress and the fatigue arrived. We're competing with circumstances that are not the best. We arrived for this game in condition, and that was an important factor in the second half. It was a really tough day." Now, don't get me wrong, Spurs have had an unbelievable season given the circumstances, but do you think their lack of transfer activity might actually pull the rug from under their feet?
Well, there's certainly there is a potential for that to happen, no doubt. My feeling is it won't. I think you have to look at certainly even what I think he was alluding to from a fatigue factor. Over the last 24, 25 days, you know, they've been playing on average every three and a half days. And you know, that's an incredibly tough situation to be in with the Premier League. But to be able to keep a consistent third spot, which they've really done over those sort of about 11 games, I mean, again, it's a testament, I think, to, you know, their training methodology, what they're doing from an overall, you know, a mental performance point of view to keep that focus. But you're going to get your hiccups. And I think, as just alluded here a second ago, I think they might have just been one of those days where they, you know, they didn't have the legs. And then they were thinking a little bit about Tuesday, but they know they can't look much farther because they still need to do the business. I think at the end of the day, they will. And I think it was just one of those days that happens. If you look over, as I say, over the last sort of three and a half weeks, how they've performed, they've been in some incredibly high intensity, stressful, both physically and mental games. So, you know, it's just a natural element of the game that you get some of these hiccups. But in the end of the day, I think they'll still be able to put themselves in that third position.
See, this is the thing, Michael. Even if they get knocked out by Ajax, which I kind of don't think will happen, but this isn't a knock on Ajax, don't get me wrong, but I think Spurs will have too much for them. Even if Spurs do get knocked out, the way that United and Arsenal are, and we'll go into them in just a moment, the way that their form is at the moment, I can't see Spurs dropping out of top four, so it's kind of win-win at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think they understand that, you know. And again, we go back to a previous show when we talked about Spurs, and I'm just amazed, given all of the moving parts around that club at this moment in time, you know, that they had with the building of the stadium, you know, the obvious transfer policy that was presented to the boss in terms of, you know, what he was able to spend, which was zero. You know, they've done amazingly well, and to see them in the semifinal of the Champions League is just sort of icing on the cake. So I think there's too much positive momentum there, even with the loss on the weekend, and they're probably glad they probably put that loss under their belt now, and it didn't come tomorrow. So even though I think that game is going to be incredibly tough, because I think Ajax is an incredibly impressive team right now, and they're one that really has nothing to lose either. So the expectation there certainly is going to be a great game tomorrow over the two legs. I think there's two teams who really want to go out and play football at this point.
Yeah, fully agree with that. Fully agree with it. Right, you mentioned positive momentum. Let's talk about negative momentum. And Arsenal, Man United blew the chance of closing the gap and improving their chances of a top four finish. Unai Emery's men suffered another away defeat, this time at the hands of Leicester City, while another David De Gea clanger cost United all 3 points at home to Chelsea. Rod, up until De Gea's mistake, United looked comfortable, to be fair, mate. Mata's goal was very well worked, and Chelsea hardly troubled the keeper. The equaliser completely knocked the wind out of their sails, though. Does this go back to what we've been saying about the players' attitudes, or are they, again, simply not good enough?
I think it was a combination of things, to be honest. Obviously, like you said, United were doing well. They actually started really well. It was a good goal. And obviously, the mistake by David De Gea, you know, goals change games, and it obviously lifted Chelsea and put us on the back step. So, yes, we know that some players aren't good enough. I just think that, we've got to think that Chelsea are a really good side as well. So, that there's always that equaliser. But, yeah, we know that the players aren't good enough. We know, you know, some players need to go and some players need to go out. It's just a matter of sticking together now, trying to get the next two wins, with Huddersfield and Cardiff, which really we should do. If we don't, there's more questions should be asked, but I'd expect us to win both of them games. And, you know, with David De Gea, it's just unfortunate. You know, the guy's been the best player at the club for the last almost 5 years. So, you know, he's going through a bad patch. We stick by him, you know, and just hopefully he comes through it. You know, to people talking about the Schmeichel and the the Van der Sar, it's absolutely ridiculous to say that he's better than them two anyway. But to be even in that conversation is an achievement in itself, because, you know, Peter Schmeichel was one of the best goalkeepers I've ever seen, and Van der Sar was a close second. So, and David De Gea is in that conversation, but, you know, he's going through a bad time. You just need to stick by him, and because he's a world-class keeper, and he's probably the only world-class consistent player we've got at the club.
Mm. Well, Rod, you know what, mate, and you know, you're probably going to disagree with me on this, and you know, you're well within your rights to, but I've been very critical of De Gea for quite a while, and it hasn't been recently. It's been the past few years, and as great as he's been for us, his command of the area, I've always been a bit sus kind of thing in that sense. You know, it's been like, he doesn't have that command like Schmeichel and Van der Sar did. He doesn't have that, you know, he doesn't have that presence. He doesn't come for catches. He, you know, he's not very, I say, clinical when it comes to punching the ball and whatnot. And his starting position has always been a bit iffy, as far as I'm concerned. And I know, obviously, we can't draw comparisons with those three goalkeepers because it's not fair. You know, Schmeichel won everything there is to win at United. Van der Sar, same at club level for Ajax and Juventus, and especially at United. So we can't really compare the three. The only thing is, I'm just a bit concerned, not just because of his form, but in terms of his mentality. We've heard so many stories about Real Madrid wanting him, and as you said yourself in the past, Real Madrid are a bit weird fans anyway. You know, they throw the white flags and whistle players like Bale and Ronaldo have done some fantastic things for the club. So if David De Gea was to go to Real Madrid, he wouldn't have it easy like he's got it at United. He's adored by the fans, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And, you know, like I say, everyone's got their opinion, but, you know, for the last 5 years, he's been the best player, voted by his peers and by the fans for the last 5 years. He's having a bad season. Look at the players that he's got in front of him. You know, you can't always blame. It's a bad decision to be in. If you make a mistake, it's ultimately cost you a goal, and it's very much highlighted. So, you know, everyone's got their opinion, but for me, he's been their consistent world-class player, and to get rid of him would be absolute madness.
Yeah, I agree. The only other thing I have to add to this thing is that goes back to what you just said about the players that he's got in front of him. A lot of people were criticising him for the West Ham goal, and they're saying, oh, he gave the ball away and whatnot. But again, when you look at David De Gea, when he takes his goal kicks, he often, more often than not, he wants to play it short. He wants to build from the back. When you've got people like Phil Jones and Chris Smalling, who, let's be honest, they can't string a five-yard ball together, can they? So, of course, he's going to go long. And at that point, he's going to make mistakes because you're going to lose possession more often than not. So I think that, okay, the Messi goal at Barcelona, that was unfortunate. The goal at the weekend, again, that was unfortunate. And yes, I have criticised him in the past, and I've been very, I don't know, it's probably been unfair criticism because heat of the moment, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I think that right now we really need to get this contract nailed down with him, because any other world-class club can take him and he can leave, because who wouldn't want him?
Yeah, like I say, you know, he's having a bad season. If, you know, it does need to get sorted, this contract talks over the summer. You can't let it go into the season. It has to either say you either sign or you're down the road. It's one of the two.
Fair enough. Well, not down the road to City, hopefully.
Well, why would City? Well, Edison's a fantastic footballer and a goalkeeper. I'm sure Edison's going to be there for the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, true. All right, Jan, back to you, mate. I'm sorry to wake you up if you've fallen asleep, because I know that you woke up before the show started and you had a bit of that morning breath on you. As much as we want to see our team play in the Champions League, let's be fair, mate, we're clearly miles behind the elite team. So should we knock Europe on the head and focus on domestic matters?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Absolutely.
This is including Europa League, by the way.
Sorry?
I know we'll probably get into Europa League, but even still.
Do you know what? The embarrassing thing is, even if we get into the Europa League, the size of our club, we won't even be favourites to win it. That's how bad we are. It just says, well, I think United should just write off Europe as well. You know, we've won the Europa League before. It's not a competition that, you know, we really want to be in. You could maybe blood the kids and give them a bit of experience in Europe, in places maybe if we end up with like a team in Ukraine or places like that, give them a bit of experience under the belt. The only worrying thing about United is, you know, being out of Europe or maybe out of the Champions League, could they sign the players that they had ambition to sign now if they were going to get into the Champions League? Now, the name being the name could attract the players, but as we all know, it's not the Man United of old. This is the new Man United, which from top to bottom is not run properly. And I actually fear for United. I don't want to sound dramatic, but I actually do. I don't see a plan with United. I don't see a structure there. I see signings who are just, you know, have been desperate signing, like your Alexis Sanchez is. United are throwing money into it without a plan. And it's worrying. Until they get the board upstairs, that maybe the football director, I fear for United. I really do.
Well, let me tell you something. It's something I read on Twitter, so I'm not going to take it as gospel. Apparently, Rio Ferdinand has been lined up to get the sporting director role. Now, again, Rod, you got your opinion on this because, you know, obviously, you know, Rio Ferdinand is somewhat of a club legend, apparently. This is the guy that forgot to take a drugs test, conveniently, and then while he was on his 8-month ban, was schmoozing with Chelsea. Is this the kind of person that we want to be our sporting director? And let's be honest, how is Rio Ferdinand going to negotiate deals and all that kind of stuff? I can't really see Rio Ferdinand doing that. I mean, his cap company isn't really going well, is it?
No, but, you know, let's look at the job. The job is, you know, it's a job, which is a big job, because it's an important job, because he has to be the one liaising with the manager and in constant with the manager. Is Rio Ferdinand the right place for me? No. For the simple reason, I know he's on TV and he's been at Man United, but for me, he's not the brightest person. I've spoken to him, I've met him, and it needs someone who knows Manchester United. You know, it's to be fair, he does know Manchester United in and out, but I think Darren Fletcher, someone like that, or someone who knows the club a bit better and is a bit more intelligent.
What about Van der Sar, Rod?
Yeah, Van der Sar would be perfect, absolutely perfect. Yeah.
He doesn't take any prisoners, as you'll find out later on, which we'll go into.
No, he doesn't. Well, that's that Dutch mentality. They have got that in him. So, but yeah, I just don't think Rio Ferdinand be a good fit for that.
Hey, it'll be great for the social media followers, though, wouldn't it? The old social media, the old Twitterings.
Yeah, get his Instagram up a bit.
There you go.
What about Gary Neville, lads?
I don't see there being a problem, but I don't think Gary Neville will take it.
Yeah, I don't, but it would be perfect as well.
Mm. I think he's got other business arrangements, so I think that's kind of a conflict of interest, is it not? But anyway, Anyway, Michael, still on United, under Woodward, they spent over 800 million since Ferguson retired, and their highest finish is second, albeit being miles off City. At what point do the owners say, sorry, Ed, you're great at bringing in commercial deals like your pot noodle from China and whatnot, but you've really messed up? Or do results on the pitch not matter to the Glazers?
I think, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, the business side of Man United is an impressive freight train of revenue, and the brand itself still seems to generate that interest, and they worked very hard over the years to position themselves as a global brand. But the reason that they positioned themselves as a global brand is because they had success on the football pitch. And liking to the conversation Jan said earlier, at some point in time, you know, it's going to affect, you know, what players do as it relates to choosing the club over some other club that is, you know, on the world stage. I mean, when you look at Man United right now as a neutral, you know, there is an obvious culture problem that is permeated through the club over the last years. And it's the first time in the last couple of years for me, you know, having watched United since I was a kid, because they were pretty much the mainstream club on the television to watch for us, it's the first time ever that I don't really know who they are. You know, they always had a specific player profile. They had a specific game model. They had a specific ethos to what they believed and what they did. And I don't see that now. And I think the job at hand for the you know, the technical director, the sporting director, whatever moniker you want to give that person, because it certainly isn't Woodward, because what you've just said is he's proven not to be able to deliver. And you know, my grandfather had a really good saying. He used to say, the fish never rots in the middle. It always rots from the top down. So that, for me, is a big statement. And this is going to be their greatest challenges. How can they redevelop who they are, what they are, and how will they attract those players to deliver on that? But I certainly think they're missing somebody to orchestrate that move in the club, because if they don't do it soon, yeah, sure, they're Man United and they're always going to have that appeal and that global appeal and the support. They've built up that and good credibility. But if they don't start competing at the highest levels that they used to compete at, they're not going to be a team of reckoning for a very long time.
The thing is, Mark, I'm sure you've heard the term the tail is wagging the dog. Which appears to be happening at United. But the thing is, the dog walker, being Woodward, is actually letting the dog shit on his own doorstep.
Don't you have a plastic bag to pick that up?
Well,
who's doing that?
Well, it's Solskjaer at the moment. Poor bloke.
See, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the decisions that are being made and you guys being, you know, blooded Man United people, you must say some of the decisions are very knee-jerk. You know, I'm not saying that Ole's not the guy necessarily, but did they actually need to make that decision when they did? You know, was it going to be a problem signing? Was he going to be a problem signing him by the end of the season? Could they not have done their due diligence further? Could they not have looked at, okay, we actually have some time here to make a decision that might change the course of action? Now they've put themselves in an even higher pressurized situation, and they've also put it on Ole, and you can see it already. So, I just think there's a big moment coming for this club in terms of what their next moves are. And I'm not necessarily thinking it's going to be players. It's going to be someone who's going to redefine who they are.
Well, fingers crossed they get their fingers out their backsides, because at this moment in time, United, as you said, they don't have an identity. And the longer it goes on, the more they'll fall behind, which I'm sure a lot of fans will be happy about. But anyway, let's move on. Talking about falling behind.
Just a quick one. Going back to what Jan says about, you know, with structure and stuff like that. You know, Ollie's a Manchester United bloke as well. He's seen it. He's seen it day in and day out. And you've got to give him time to set that structure. He's been there 3 months. You know, let's judge him at the end of next season, then we'll see where we're at.
Well, this is it, Rod. I mean, Klopp has been given 3 years at Liverpool, and he's gotten to close to a title. He's gotten close to a Champions League. I'm not saying that will happen with us, but the difference is Klopp has got a board that will back him. I mean, I saw a team lineup. I need to get it up and then tell you guys later or whatever. But a team lineup from 3 years ago today, it looks completely different to what he's got now. And the thing is, Liverpool were able to sell a lot of the deadwood. But the difference is, you know, Nathaniel Clines, all these other players, they weren't on like 100 grand a week or 120 grand a week like your Rojos and your Joneses and your Smallings. So the problem that we have is getting shot at these players. I know Fellaini went to China, but I don't think many Chinese teams will want a Phil Jones or all these other ones. So we're stuck in a situation now where, you know, there are a lot of players on big contracts with a few years left on them. And who would want to sign them, and how would we get rid of them? So,
well, listen, I think the way Ollie's going to deal with it is the way Fergie dealt with it. He was going to speak to him in the office, face to face, and listen, you can stay here as much as you want, but you're not going to play. Now, if then what top players want to sit on the bench, i.e. Lukaku's, the Sanchez's, if they're happy to sit on the bench, then you know, that's what type of persons they are. But that's what Ollie's going to be saying to him. He's going to be up front and saying, listen, you're not wanted here, you're not going to play, so you can either sit on the bench or you can get yourself a move.
Well, see, this is it. From what I've heard is before the last international break, after the Paris Saint-Germain game, he actually sat down with a few players. He said, you're not going to be here next season, like your Alexis Sanchez and a few of the Spanish-speaking footballers. And that may have caused a bit of a rift, which coincided with our dip in form. I don't know whether it's just a coincidence or whether it's just something that's just happened. But from what I've been told, he's actually sat down with a few players and said, your future ain't at United. So I don't know if, again, that's maybe him being a bit naive, or maybe just, again, the players just doing whatever they want. But you're right, it's going to take time. But at the same time, he needs to have strong people backing him. And I don't think they're strong enough.
That's a learning process. I highly doubt that, but only because, you know, his old manager didn't do that. He always did it on the last day of the season. So I don't know where he'd get that from by doing it a month before the season ends. That wouldn't make any sense to me, because you're gonna upset the apple cart, and then obviously the results are gonna dip like they have done. So I can't really see that being true, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
I just one thing, if I can add on that, is that what I think should happen is, because there's a lot of bad eggs in that dressing room, I think Ollie needs to, you know, figure out who they are. I think he knows already. And the problem is get shot again. If Pogba, for example, is a bad egg, and we don't feel we can progress with him being in that squad, with Martial, etc., Ollie needs to go to the board and say, guys, if we need to move forward, we need to get rid of these players. And the board have to back him.
Yeah, but he needs to go to the board and say, look, I don't care if each player has 7 million followers on Twitter and 10 million on Instagram and 15 million on Instagram or Snapchat, whatever. We need to get rid of them. It doesn't matter.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. The board have to be strong enough where Oli goes in and goes, listen, Pogba, Martial, I don't care if it's your poster boys, I don't want them. You know, and then the board have to back the manager. If the board are not going to back the manager, then, you know, we're going to take one step forward and four steps backward.
Yeah.
With what we're doing at the moment. This was the Mourinho problem, wasn't it? The fact that Mourinho wanted more money to invest in the squad, get rid of his deadwood that we've got there. The board weren't willing to do that. Mourinho fell out with the board. He fell out with the players because he didn't trust them. Before you know it, it's all chaotic. And look where we've ended up. Now, Ollie can't afford to do that. I mean, you know, if the board are going to choose to neglect Ollie, then Ollie's going to walk as well. And if Ollie goes as a club legend, where do we go from then? Who's going to want to take the job after that?
No, you're right. You know? Well, yeah, let's just see what the summer has in store for us. We've got two games coming up. Let's just hope we get 6 points from six and get something out this season. I don't know. But
play
listen,
the kids. Play
yeah,
Bruce,
but you know, but you know,
Sean.
But you know what? Yeah, and at the end of the day, right? If you'd have said, you know, after the Liverpool game, right, that Mourinho would have got sacked and Solskjaer would have come in, then we would have, you know, made that 11 points difference up from Arsenal. You'd have laughed. But at the end of the day, they've done remarkably well to get where they've gone so far. I know the run of form has been great, but listen, 11 points is a big difference. So
it'll tell me where his head's at for these. Who's in the sub bench for these last two games?
Yeah, true, very true. Right.
I think you'll play the kids against Huddersfield and Cardiff. I think you'll give players like
they can't play kids at Huddersfield. No, you'll beat them.
They'll get kicked left, right, and centre.
Yeah.
Mind you, if he plays Martial, he'll get kicked and give up after 2 minutes. But anyway, less said about him, the better, I think. Let's move on to another club that's in disarray, and that's Michael's team, Arsenal.
Your turn, Michael.
Rod, Arsenal conceded 3 goals for the third consecutive game. Emery, like Mourinho in his first season, is probably focusing on the Europa League, but it isn't as if he made wholesale changes against Leicester. The defending on Sunday, especially for Vardy's first, was shambolic, to say the least.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, they're going through a tough patch as well, but to keep on conceding 3 goals, that, you know, that's an issue, especially when they've got some big games coming up. You know, we've seen it before with United, with us, how winning that competition can give you a lifeline and get you into the Champions League. So they need to stop the goals quick. But you know, they've got some tough games. They've got some tough games, and it looks like they're gonna probably play Chelsea in the final.
Yeah,
and that's then you'd obviously fancy Chelsea, but you know, on the day Arsenal can obviously turn them over easily. But
you'd expect Chelsea to win that, but you know, if they don't, especially if they keep conceding three goals a game, because with the quality Chelsea got, if they don't stop it quick, then it's going to become a bit of a bad season for him and a bad season for Emery, because really, you know, he started off well and it seemed to have dipped now, and he's probably seen where he's at and what he needs to bring in and what he needs to get rid of.
That's right. And there's a
gents, I've got a very quick question. Sorry, Stan, if I may. Do you not think Arsenal have progressed under Emery?
I think so.
I think they've become a bit more steelier, a bit more streetwise, but they still need players. We're probably squad wise better off, but you know, they're probably in the same position as us defensively. They're just all over the show.
Don't you feel their football has digressed though?
Pardon?
Don't you feel that their football has digressed and not as
going to? That's the style he plays. You ever watch when he plays? But you know, like I say, he's got to bring the players in that he wants. He's still Arsene Wenger's team, I think. But ultimately, if you ask the Arsenal fans, the majority of them will be happy, I reckon. You're always going to get a few moaners, but that's the Arsenal lot, isn't it? They love them.
But this is it, Rod. They've had the same problem as us, whereby they've had a manager for over two decades. And they're only used to seeing success. And the thing is, when you've got a new manager that comes in, obviously he's going to implement his own style, bring in his own players. He's going to want to get rid of the deadwood. I mean, Ozil, a lot of people are getting Emery's back saying, oh, Ozil hasn't been playing and this and that. But at the same time, what has Ozil done? As we said for years, what has he done to warrant a place in the starting lineup?
No, I know, but you know, I go back to the Arsenal fans, the good ones. They're kind of like the United fans. They know the football, and they know they have to give the manager time. It's going to take time. It's obviously going to at least take 2 or 3 years, because like you said, 20 years at one club is a long time, and to step a stamp on it, you know, it's going to take 12 months. It's going to take a little bit longer.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was talking to Harry from Chronicles of Aguna about it the other day. In fact, I was tweeting him, and he was like, I don't know what's going on with Arsenal. And I said, listen, at the end of the day, you saw it at the beginning of the season, how Emery was basically, you know, drilling his players down to the ground pre-season. They were absolutely knackered. They were dead on their knees. And with the Europa League campaign, with all these games and, you know, trying to get in that top four, I mean, it's obviously taking its toll on the players. And same way with us, when we were in the Europa League, players were dropping like flies. I remember Rashford was getting injured, you know, all these other players were getting injured. And the same thing is happening with Arsenal. And they don't seem to have the depth to cope with it.
No, if you haven't got the depth, we've seen it before. We've seen it with Leeds at the end of the season. Now are there signs of struggle? You know, if you haven't got big squads, and you play that high intensity work rate football, it takes a toll on your body. And if you haven't got a big squad, you don't get the rest period. You do pick up injuries and performances drop. So, you know, like I say, he needs to bring in players. They need to add players, and they need players quick.
Yeah, but that Dennis Suarez that they signed in January on loan, he's gone back because he's injured. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. They need defenders. They're like us, really. They need defenders, because if you've not got a solid defence, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
You're definitely going to struggle. Look at Liverpool this year. The sort of defence they've got, they let in 20 goals, 19 goals in a season. Well, that's good going, that.
Yeah.
And all their back four, you arguably could be there for the next 10 years.
That's right. And yeah, and Yuri Tielemans gave Leicester the lead with a cracking header. He's really taken to the league like a duck to water.
Yeah, he's a good little player, mate. You know, followed him about when he was at Anderlecht, went to Monaco, struggling Monaco side, and then got his long move to Leicester, and he's hit the ground running, as you said. He's nice and tidy on the ball. He's a box-to-box midfielder as well. He can defend, he can put his foot in, he can pass, he can score goals, he's got a really good shot. He's got a good header the other day as well, which is not really part of his game, but, you know, any goal that you can score in the Premiership is a good goal. And, Leicester would do well now to keep him, because I'm pretty sure the bigger teams now might keep an eye on him and might end up in the Premiership, but maybe not Leicester.
He's a United player, though, isn't he?
He is a United player. I think so. I think he could come in at United and do a job, but Then again, I think anybody can at the moment. Things are that bad. But, I don't want to take away anything from Tielemans. He's a good little player, and I think he could easily play for any of the top four promotion sides.
There's loads of these little gems at these kind of clubs. The one you talked about there, Madison.
Yep.
Harvey Barnes, he's a good player.
Harvey Barnes.
Yeah.
There you go. And Fraser at Bournemouth is having a stonking season. Michael, I mentioned it earlier about how United suffered the fatigue and injuries during the Europa League campaign. It seems to be happening to Arsenal now. How does Emery approach the final stretch of the season?
Well, he'd love to approach it by going out and actually buying some defenders, as Roger said. But he can't. Yeah, I mean, it's a balancing act for him now. I believe strongly that time is critical as the teams transition, and we've just mentioned a couple of teams that are going through that because they've had such an entrenched mentality and way of life under long-term managers, and you can see the suffering that is happening in change. You know, there's certain expectations that are there. So when he's going into these last games, he's trying to balance the situation where, you know, he's a couple of games away from a cup final that puts him in the competition that he's striving to be in. And he balances that off with the fact that he knows that if he puts a couple of results together here in the next couple of weeks, he at least gets to compete on a stage within the European market. So it's a tough one for him. One thing for sure is if, you know, I'm not sure how much influence he's going to have on this in the next couple of weeks, because there's not a lot of changes you're going to make at this point other than trying to make the appropriate selections for the appropriate time. Mm. And without the certain depth that we've just talked about, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. And, you know, the Valencia game is no given, you know, and I don't know. You know, and when you've got a wounded dog in Brighton coming up, who's still fighting. So it's a tough go for them at this moment in time.
That's right. Right, down at the bottom, Cardiff's 1-0 loss at already relegated Fulham enhanced their relegation credentials as Brighton earned a point against Newcastle, or should I say Roberto Rojas FC. Cardiff's defeat meant Southampton's thrilling 3-3 draw against Bournemouth means the Saints are safe. Now, Michael, I can't help but think that Ralph Hasenhüttl will be poached by another team soon. He's worked wonders at Southampton, hasn't he?
You know, you look at the work that he's done. He's done some incredible things. I mean, he comes in with a pretty impressive resume anyway from his previous clubs that he was worked with, and certainly he was one that was tipped to maybe even be the Bayern Munich manager, even though I'm unsure his styling methodology fits the club. But in terms of what he's done in Southampton, incredible. And incredible, you know, based on taking the same group of players that Mark Hughes had and Pellegrino had, and creating a completely different mindset and a different tactical setup. You can tell he spent time on the training pitch, you know, because you can see how the team just applies themselves differently and how he's put importance in certain sections of the field, you know, the defensive unit, where they press, where they start attack initiation, midfield, where they press, how do they service the front. I mean, it's very, very impressive. And yes, you're right. He may have put himself in the shop window, which could put Southampton right back where they were before, looking for another manager. That's but right. Maybe he sees promise. Maybe he does and thinks, you know, this is a project, and he strives to maybe spend another year with Southampton before he gets even a bigger job. Who knows? But certainly you've got to applaud the work he's done and over that period of time.
That's right. And Jan Huddersfield were well at 5-0 at Anfield on Friday night, falling behind after only 15 seconds. And with City also winning at the weekend, this could go down to the wire.
Are we talking about the title or the relegation, mate?
Well, the title.
Title, all right, okay. I thought you were talking about... Oh, yeah, sorry.
Wakey, wakey.
Yeah, sorry.
Colombian bean coffee, my friend. Come on.
Yeah. Well, we expected that anyway, to be honest. You got to give both teams incredible amount of respect, or, you know, for what they've done. I mean, I think if City go and win the last two games, is it 13 or 14 wins in a row?
97 points, mate. They could end second on 97 points.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Imagine, you know, losing the league with that many, you know, and potentially Liverpool only lost one game this season, that was the Man City as well. So they could not win the title. And City, by winning it, I think would win 14 games in a row, if I'm not mistaken. So it's phenomenal stat. And it just shows the gulf in class between them two and the rest. I mean, you know, and again, like what I said with City and Liverpool as well, the amount of games they've had and the amount of important games and emotional games, and for them to still be fighting on both fronts, especially Liverpool as well, where they're in the semi-final again of another Champions League, you know, and they haven't really spent the money City have to do that. You know, even as a United fan, you got to hold your hands up and give credit where it's due. As for City as well, you know, for them to win the league, our encounter last year was so easy for them. For Liverpool to challenge them after they've done, they have shown resilience. Yeah, you know, money, yeah, does get you where it's gotten City so far, but them players have showed resilience to keep fighting. I mean, yesterday, you can say on paper, Burnley, you know, you should win. But, you know, as we all know, when it's a pressure game and the situation is difficult, you got to find the strength to do it. And I thought they were very professional yesterday, and they deserved the points.
Yeah, they drew that Burnley there last season. So,
yeah,
as a result.
Exactly. So, that's an improvement from last year as well. And like I said, though, it's the occasion, it's the pressure. It's not... You know, you could look at it, like you say, on paper and go, hey, Burnley City will turn up and win 4-0. But as we all know, football's not like that. And, you know, it's 0-0 at half-time. There's pressure, one mistake, a bad refereeing decision, whatever. And Burnley are 1-0 up. And before you know it, the title's gone. So, you know, you got to give them credit as well.
Yeah, Kabaddi football almost stopped them, but it didn't. Right, Rod, you hear the term fine margins used a lot in football, mate. We saw John Stones prevent a Liverpool goal with his goal line clearance, and that was only 11 millimetres, so that was the difference. At the weekend, 29 millimetres was the difference for Aguero's goal. City are grinding out wins at a very important stage of the season.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier in one of the earlier shows that, you know, we haven't seen City yet with someone really on the coattails, and Liverpool have definitely been that this season, and they've just been on an unbelievable run. I know if they carry on, that, you know, it's going to be unbelievable to win the league, and obviously Liverpool, if they carry on winning, to not win the league with that many points will be just heart wrenching. But you know, ultimately, whoever wins the league is going to be the best team of the season, and it could be any of them really, but it's going to be exciting because I still think there's got to be something's got to happen. They can't win out. It'd be just unbelievable, but it looks like it's going that way, but I'm sure there's a span in the word that you're always used as in these title races, and not just by one of them, I'm sure both of them will, but I just can't see it. So, you know, you look at the games now and you think, The one on Burnley, you really did think that, especially the way Burnley were playing, but you know, City, like say, grinded it out, and you know, it's a game of inches, and City, they've rightly come away with the 3 points.
Yeah, well, City have got Leicester next, and you know who's in charge of Leicester, Mr. Chocolate Man himself.
Yeah, I know, it's you know, if it was at Leicester, but you know, it's still going to be a difficult game, but you know, I don't think Leicester are going to sit in, so I think with them coming out and just leaving spaces, I just think it'd be too. I just think with the run they're on now and the mentality that Pep Guardiola's got all the players going, you know, that the training sessions must be lively there. You know, it must be really lively because they're all chomping at the bit to play. They all want to play, and you know, it must be still difficult for him to pick a team. And brilliant to have people on the bench that they can pull on and change the game, because they're definitely going to need it. And Liverpool don't really have as many weapons, so it'd be a better achievement if Liverpool won the league. But you know, I can't see City dropping points. Mm.
Oh, Liverpool got Wolves on the last day, so that will be a tasty one.
When Liverpool last day were?
Wolves at home.
Yeah, see, that's a difficult game as well.
Yeah,
it's a banana skin, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
I think this is
because Wolves. Wolves. You know, people say, "Oh, the season's over and Wolves have got nothing to play for." People are playing for practice. It just doesn't happen anymore. I think.
Well, they won at the weekend, Rod.
Pardon?
They won at the weekend at Watford.
Yeah, exactly. And what a finish on the end of the season with a bang. You know, they should be in a cup final, but they're not. Another minute, and they would have been. So, yeah, I think the type of mentality that their manager has and the players they have, I don't think they'll be on the beach yet. I think they'll keep the integrity of the Premier League and it'll be a good game. And like I say, a tough game for Liverpool.
Yeah, that's right. So, in other news, Leeds United missed out on automatic promotion to the Premier League following a controversial 1-1 draw against promotion hopefuls Aston Villa. Now, with the game locked at 0-0, Aston Villa striker Jonathan Khadija went down injured. Leeds midfielder Tyler Roberts looked like he was about to put the ball out, but changed his mind and played it forward to Matthias Klick, who put his team in front. What followed can only be described as carnage. Players and staff clashed, and Villa's Ahmed El Ghazi was sent off for an alleged elbow on Patrick Bamford. Marcelo Bielsa and John Terry had a few words, although one doesn't speak English and I doubt the other speaks Spanish, so I'm not sure how that worked out. Villa boss Dean Smith then also asked Bielsa to allow his team to walk the ball in the net, which Bielsa agreed to, but as Adoma was bearing down on goal, Pontus Janssen tried to prevent the forward from scoring. So, gents, I've got so many questions asked with this one. First of all, were Leeds wrong to play on? Michael?
In today's players' code, yes, they were wrong to play on. He had enough indication from the Villa players to play it out that he probably should have played it out. Even though this is a problem that is creeping in. The referee called the foul, but when you look at the highlight, he's given the advantage to Leeds. They're in possession. He's having a look at the Villa player. He's trying to determine whether he's really injured or not. You would have. I think there was an indication that they didn't believe he was injured, and that's why they sort of went out wide and they were looking and waiting for him to sort of get upright or at least sit up. But in terms of what the players' code is right now, yeah, I think they were wrong to play on. And it, as you said, carnage is an excellent word.
Thank you. I'm not a wordsmith, I promise.
I loved it. It was a great word.
Rod, what would you have done, mate? Because let's be honest, Leeds needed a win to stand the chance of getting automatic promotion. I know Sheffield United won the day before and it would have gone down to the wire had Leeds won. So when you're in Leeds' position, would you have kicked the ball out?
It's one of them situations. I agree with Michael. You know, if today's game, but you know, these players would have been taught to grow up to stop when the whistle's blown, and there was no whistle, and if Aston Villa have kind of stopped, then started. You know, ultimately, the right outcomes come. They've scored, and then Leeds have done the right thing by letting them score. If 5-10 minutes before it, Aston Villa were in attacking position, a Leeds player's gone down injured, and the Aston Villa players have kicked the ball out, and they're in the last third in attacking position. So you would think Leeds would do the same 5 minutes on, but that's why Aston Villa's players stopped, but you know, you should play to the whistle, but you know, ultimately at today's game, if someone's injured, just kick the ball out.
Rod, you're right. Don't you remember though? And this is where I say the game itself has changed that way. I remember the coaching staff when I was young; is they always told you play until you hear a whistle. They were so adamant about that, right?
Yes,
and it was.
So you've got
drilled into you as a youth player. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And, so that's what I'm trying to say, Michael. You've got a generation of players on.
Totally.
You've got a generation.
I guess the question.
Players.
The question is, what happened? you know, what happened to the game that way. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, exactly.
I get the game evolves and the game changes, but it is a little frustrating to, because it could be very simple of saying, look, the last time I looked, the only person really in charge in the game is the guy carrying the whistle. So unless he blows it, the game continues to play. But the players themselves have decided to affect that. And I think we're on the same page there, is that under the code right now, probably should have played it out.
I think, yeah, but like I said, 5 or 10 minutes before it, that, you know, Aston Villa attacking position, a lead player's gone down and they've kicked the ball out straight away. So you'd expect
I think this whole sportsmanship thing has gone too far now. I think it's got silly because, let's be 100% honest, it wasn't a head injury. It wasn't like the Bolton player, I forget his name now. Mwamba, yeah, it wasn't Mwamba, that kind of situation. Okay, fair enough. I think that the guy Khadija went off injured. I think they substituted him, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but at the same time he wasn't, you know, in a state where he needed hospital attention or, you know, a doctor or someone like that. He was just down, and we see that time and time again. We see the time wasting. So what is the referee expected to do? I agree, play to the whistle. It wasn't a serious injury. They played on. Okay, the Villa players stopped. But at the same time, as you guys quite rightly said, play to the whistle. I don't see what the big deal was.
We live in a world where it's 2019 now and health and safety's took over. People will be ringing in saying, oh, no, he needs to be looked after. Oh, you know, it's the way of the world, unfortunately. We should play to the whistle, but, yeah, it's the way of the world, unfortunately.
To quote my friend Anthony de Blasi in America, the pussification of our nation continues. Sorry, you're going to say, Michael?
No, I'm not saying anything. I'm just laughing.
I've got them all day. Don't worry about it. Yeah, and I didn't get your take on this. What would you do?
There is no way I'm kicking that ball out.
Thank you. You're a real man. He's got balls.
Do you know what, Stel? I hardly agree with you, but I agree with you on this because there's no rule that says you've got to kick the ball out, right? Now, where has this rule come from, or this thing where fair play? It's a lot of rubbish because you could be attacking, right, as a fullback. You've gone forward, all of a sudden, because you can't get back, you can fall on the ground and hope that someone kicks the ball out so like you don't have to get back. You know, it is another form of time wasting if you're not injured genuinely. It's not a head injury, as you said. So what, every player that goes down, the opposition has to kick the ball out. Yesterday, there was the same situation when Ander Herrera had the ball. I think Azpilicueta was on the floor. And the United fans were encouraging Herrera to go and attack. The only reason United put the ball out is when they saw Rashford on the floor, so they put the ball out. So there is no law or no indication of any player or any right to put the ball down. To put the ball out of play. You carry on playing.
No, but it's you know, if you've been playing and you've been playing in this kind of area, it's kind of a written rule between the players now.
But this is it, Rod. I mean,
an unwritten rule. Sorry.
Yeah, but who's made it, Rod? No one made it.
Yeah, the obviously the players, because they're all pussies and all rolling around like they've been shot.
That's where I agree with you.
So you can't detect if someone's done a ligament or someone's just rolling around play acting.
Yeah, but that means that you'll have to kick the ball out every single time. Now, I'm gonna reverse it. If you stop kicking the ball out, players who are genuinely not injured will actually get up because they know that no one's gonna put the ball out. So that might actually stop it.
Yeah,
I agree with you. So it's just one of them. It's one of them grey areas, and it's like the offside. It's a grey area.
You know, I'm not going to put too much pressure on the official on this one. But at the same time, he could have blown the whistle and then done a drop ball after that. It's that simple. I don't know.
Yeah, he has different situations
to 5-10 minutes before it, Villa kicked the ball out for a Leeds player that was injured, so you expect them to do it the exact same 5-10 minutes later, and they didn't.
Yeah. Well,
but they don't have to. I know what you're saying.
No, they don't have to, but it's like I say, it's an unwritten rule between the players. If you're going to kick it out for one, you've got to kick it out for us as well. Or what we're doing is, that's the way they're playing their football these days. Yes, 20 years ago, 15, it wouldn't have happened, but you know, people wouldn't be rolling about 20 years ago.
All this reminds me of when I was handing out invitations for my kid's birthday. I was like, well, shall we invite that one? Well, she didn't invite her to her birthday, so we're not going to invite her to... There you go. Right, Rod, tell me something. What do you think would have happened if Leeds didn't allow Villa to walk the ball in? Because I remember when Kanu scored for Arsenal in an FA Cup game against Sheffield United, the game was replayed. Do you think the FA would have done something like that, or would it have been just...
John Terry would have been flying headbutts on the side. You know, like, so it would have gone off big time. And you could see them, you know, it's still simmering. It's obviously still lying underneath, I'm sure. You know, even Derby and Leeds could face each other. There's a bit of history there as well. So they could end up playing each other in the final then. And it'd be a fantastic game because, you know, Leeds have had a great season and Aston Villa are having a great run at the minute and got fantastic players.
Mm. One final question on this. Michael, can you understand Janssen's reluctance to let Villa score?
Yeah. Totally, and I I'm not sure. You know, I don't know Janssen's situation in terms of his language scenario. Did it get lost in translation?
No. He's a no nonsense Scandinavian defender, mate.
Yep. Okay, then his English is better than Jan's. Is that what you're saying? So you know, I can see his frustration and unfortunately, whether we like it or not, and having experienced it, from working in CONCACAF, for me, we experienced it. You wouldn't believe how many times the play acting was part of the culture, and it's just become this unwritten rule, as Rod appears, and it's like a player's code. But I can understand his reluctance because he's saying, well, you know, he. And that might be the best thing, is when the players start to decide, okay, wait a minute, guys, this has gone way over the top, and we need to address it, because nobody else is going to address it. That's you know, right. So that might be a critical factor moving forward, because the referees definitely have got their own rule in terms of, you could see, if you go back to the highlight, you see he looks right down at him to make sure it wasn't a head injury, because he would have blown it right away.
Yep.
But he doesn't, and he puts his hand out, saying, look, you've got it. He's, in my opinion, he's fine. But all the, and I go back to Rod's comment about I'm wondering if we could, you know, replay time. If that Aston Villa situation had not happened where they played it out, would that have happened? Or would they have just got on with the game?
Yeah.
So, you can be assured it's going to be something that, it's happened before. I mean, you can, it's happened all over the world. You've seen situations like this. But it is getting to the point where, you know what, they're probably going to have to address it in some way, because if it's going to actually affect a match of that magnitude and that value, because you've got to remember, you know, that is the richest competition, you know, in football coming up here in the next couple of weeks, you know, so.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's just hope it doesn't happen again, eh? Jan, Rennes beat ISIS SG on penalties to win their first French Cup since 1971. This is a very talented side, mate, but I can only assume they'll be torn apart in the summer.
Yeah, I think so, mate. There's a lot of players who've kind of gone to Rennes to try and resurrect their career. Ben Arfa would be one of them, who's been phenomenal since he's been to Rennes. They'll probably be like a Monaco a few years back when they won the league, and then everybody went to Monaco and took their players. It'll probably happen with Rennes as well. You know, you can arguably say they were unlucky a little bit against Arsenal in the Europa. Otherwise, they could have knocked Arsenal out as well. But it was a fantastic achievement still to go 2-0 down against PSG, who were the, you know, ultimate favourites to win the cup anyway. To come back and then to win on penalties is fantastic. And as for PSG, their season's just gone from bad to worse, hasn't it, to be fair? Ever since United knocked them out of the Champions League, they've actually seen no joy, really. Apart from winning the league, which we knew that was going to happen anyway. You know, they've lost the cup final. Neymar is punching, you know, fans and pushing them. And it's chaotic there. And, you know, Thomas Tuchel has had a nightmare time since he's been there, you know. All right, you can say he's won the league, but that league's in the pocket, as Mourinho says, before the league's even started. So he's not really done anything amazing. And I'm pretty sure PSG will be looking for a new manager in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happened with the whole Neymar thing. Apparently the fan racially abused him. Again, I don't know how true that is. It could be lost in translation. You know, si tu ne parles pas français, you've got a problem. So, there you go. But, yeah, let's move on. Rod, Dortmund lost 4-2 at home to rival Schalke on Saturday, while Bayern could only draw at Nuremberg the following day. This means Bayern are 2 points ahead of Dortmund at the top. So, do either of them want to win the league?
Doesn't look like it, does it? It's like the top four. No one wants to take the by the bully on and to get that spot. But yeah, it's going to go down to the wire. How many games you got left there? Two or was it one?
I think it's two games.
Two or three games. Yeah. I think less. Yeah.
And you're saying Dortmund 2 points in front?
Behind.
2 points behind.
Oh, 2 points behind. Oh, well, yeah, you're not going to let that slip. So you wouldn't imagine, especially when they've been so far behind all season, and Dortmund, it looked like they're going to bottle it at the end. But you know, they still had a fantastic season, and David Sancho has been a revelation for them.
Mm. Did anyone see what happened in that Nuremberg game yesterday?
No, hit me.
90th minute penalty, Nuremberg. They hit the inside of the post and came out. So, and Nuremberg are fighting for relegation as well. So, with, I think it was 3 minutes of added time, Nuremberg are pushing forward to try and get the winner. And Kingsley Coleman has broke through 1-1 with a keeper from the halfway line. So, he's 1-1 with the keeper. And he hits it straight at the keeper to get the 3 points right at the end. When you talk about drama, them last 3 minutes was pure drama.
Mm. There you go. Thank you for that brief highlight package there, Jan. It's fantastic.
That's right. Yeah, you're welcome. No problem.
Tim Capel is quaking in his boots, mate. You're after that Eurosport spot.
I've got to improve my English first.
Well, Michael said it, so... Great stuff. Well, moving on to a little bit of a somber story here. Michael, it's been a devastating 7 days for Celtic with the passing of Billy McNeil and Stevie Chalmers. As a student of Celtic, what can you tell us about both men and what they mean to the club?
Yeah, they're, you know, incredibly sad. I think today in today's football world, we throw around that word legend quite readily, and at times, in my opinion, too readily for in terms of what certain people have achieved. But if you were going to describe those two gentlemen, you certainly would use that word. They were Lisbon Lions, and that says it all for anybody who is a Celtic fan and a member of that family. And you know, they're incredibly good servants and ambassadors for the club. My experience was more with Mr. McNeil. He was the boss when I was there as an apprentice, and he was bigger than life. He carried himself. He was the club. He led the line, whether it was on the field or off the field. Incredible servant to the community. I remember arriving and being in the dressing room and the door opening and this massive man appeared at the door frame, and he had this set of shoulders on him and this big head. I remember this big head, and he looked down and he says, "Where's this Finley?" And I kind of sheepishly put my hand up, and he goes, "They're telling me you're from Canada." And I said, "Yes," he says. "Well, you better be good." So I was like, "All right, boss," you know, sort of thing. But then, you know, a day later, he's on the pitch and he's running the first team, and he comes over to the youth team and asks how I was and how are you enjoying it, and you know, anything I could, you know, it was fantastic. The funniest thing about Billy McNeil, though, is he loved to be in the game at the end of the session. And players, they used to bring the youth team over to try and put an 11v11 together to give them a game. And then he would go into the game, and you would hear the senior players talk about, "Give it to him so he can score, so we can get out of here." Because he would want to play. He'd want to play on until he scored. So some guy would, you know, hit a square ball and go, "Oh my God," and the boss would get it, and he'd score, and training would be over. And they go, "Oh, you're fantastic, boss. You're fantastic," sort of thing. But a full setup so they could get off the training pitch.
Brilliant.
No, but amazing guy. Paul Chalmers, who was Stevie Chalmers' son, played when I was at the club as a youth player, and he was a very good player himself. But yeah, both legends, and you know, as you say, to lose two of them in 1 week is a sad day. But that club should be proud of what they achieved, and that group of players achieved, because it was something truly fantastic for anybody who followed football in the United Kingdom at that time.
That's right, and something incredibly eerie happened at Parkhead at the weekend. Celtic beat Kilmarnock 1-0, and Jozo Simunic scored the winner, and he wears the number 5 shirt. And guess what minute he scored in?
67th.
67th. Yeah. Incredible.
Oh, they'll talk about that for years.
Absolutely. So. Right, on to our final segment. And it's no longer Euro Trash, because we've got some world story. We've got one world story, so it's now World Trash.
This is Roberto Rojas, y ahora es tiempo para World Trash.
Right, our first story comes from the Copa Sudamericana, as Venezuelan Bendrix Para was sacked by Independiente after his panica penalty was easily saved by El Equidad goalkeeper Diego Novoa. Now, the club president said he is fired because we want to leave this episode behind us. Can you imagine how many players would be sacked if they missed penalties? Anyway, Chris Waddle. Story number two. Ajax's new signing, Kel Sherpen, who was a fine old fan growing up and had posted a few mean tweets about his new employers a few years ago, was forced to write 1,000 times, Ajax is the most beautiful club in the Netherlands. And Mark Overmars and Edwin van der Sar oversaw all of this, and it was quite funny because van der Sar was literally banging his fist on the table for him to get on with it. So, yeah. Our third and final story comes from Napoli, or Naples, should I say, where Jose Callejon had his shirt thrown back at him by the Napoli ultras as they continued their protest despite a 2-0 win at Frosinone. Now, a series of large banners appeared around the city of Naples on Saturday night and Sunday morning, all reading the same message. Carletto, the latest chosen one to take the fans for a ride with no real project. This was aimed at Carlo Ancelotti, who many fans believe has given them false hope. Carlo Ancelotti actually said in his press conference, "I'm surprised, you can't ask more from these players in terms of effort and professionalism." Napoli and professionalism. Never thought I'd see those two words put in the same sentence. Maybe lack of in between, but anyway, at the risk of having death threats from Napolitanos, anyway. So, gentlemen, what is your best of the worst? Ian?
Oh, it's got to be the penalty, isn't it?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any reason?
Do you know what? I actually... this might sound really controversial, but...
Ooh.
If you... All right. When you're going to step up to take a penalty, it is a really important situation. I just can't see for the life of me players that go and try and chip a goalkeeper from the penalty spot. I just, you know, put your foot through it, put it in the back of the net, score a goal. Because if you miss a penalty... Is that Michael laughing?
Yeah, I'm laughing.
Because if you're going to miss a penalty, like, you know, anyone that does a panic penalty that misses it, you just look ridiculously stupid. And I can imagine, Michael, you're a manager, ex-manager. How would you feel if your player, you know, an important moment, does that, and the keeper just stands in the middle of the goal and just catches it? I mean, surely that's going to be, like, really infuriating, no?
Oh, well, they're coach killers. You know what I mean? Like, how would you like to get me sacked, you know? I mean, it's unbelievable. But, you know, they talk about it for years when someone is successful in it, but then when there's tragedy around it, you know, because I agree with you, I picked a penalty as if you're going to ask me. I think that's it. But I've decided, I think they should change the bonus structure in football. And so what they should do is they should give all the players all of their bonuses in a bank up front at the beginning of the season. And as they don't perform, they take the money away. So slowly but surely, they think they've got 100 grand, but then they missed a penalty. Oops, that's 15 grand off. You know, square ball in midfield. Oh, 20 grand off. You know, and we go the other way. You know, instead of rewarding them for success, we take money away for failure. How about that?
Oh, I like
that. But Michael, the United players won't get paid then all season.
Can't be a bad thing, really.
know. Can you imagine Pogba taking money out of Pogba and Martial? Bloody hell, we won't hear the last of it.
Rod, only Matt Letizia's got a better penalty record than you. How would you take penalties?
It's the other way the keeper dies.
That simple. I'll never take a penalty in that case. What about you, Rod? What's your best of the worst, Adam?
What was the first one again? The penalty. I missed that one. What was it?
He's basically gone to chip the goalkeeper and he's completely messed it up.
What? The keeper saved it?
Yeah, no, the goalkeeper didn't save it. I think he just stood there and kind of caught
it. He just chipped an old Paneka. Yeah. A Paneka into his hands and he's standing there looking like an idiot.
Yeah, any time that happens, you're an idiot and it's an embarrassing. If it, like Michael said, if you go in, you hear him and talks about it. What if he doesn't? You're an idiot.
Fair enough. I mean, Zidane just about got away with it in the World Cup final, didn't he?
But Zidane. you can't tell Zidane nothing.
Hammers has done it loads of times.
Pirlo did it.
Pirlo did it, yeah. Hazard has done it, but I'm just saying, can you imagine?
You're in a World Cup or you're in a final or you're in any kind of big game and you do that, you've got to have some big balls.
it just happened. A couple of weeks ago in the MLS, the Vancouver Whitecaps, they signed an Iraqi international on loan from, where was he from? I think he was from Udine. I think it's Udine.
Is that the
anyway.
One with the LA Galaxy, Michael?
No. Maybe it was. Ali Adan is his name. Anyway, it was his first match.
Yeah,
first
I
match.
Saw it.
And he goes up, and they've been awarded a penalty. He basically walks up and takes it away from, I think it was Freddie Montero, who was the normal penalty taker, and said, "I'm the new man in town. You know, look at me." And he's tried to panic him, and he stubbed it, and it doesn't even get to the goal line.
That's right. It was with his left foot, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I saw
it. Have a look at that one on YouTube. You know, and
yeah.
You know what, Pirlo. You know what I'm going to say? Pirlo's the sort of guy that could probably make it all happen. But there's not too many Pirlos in the world, if you know what I mean.
No,
so
that's right. Well, Michael, sorry, which one's your chosen one?
I'm the penalty. Yeah? I'm the penalty for sure. Because it drives me crazy.
Fair enough. Well, personally, I'd go with the Kiel Sherpin one, being made to write a thousand times. I mean, I remember when I was at school, we had an art teacher called Mr. Coney's, right? And he had this A3 sheet of paper, and it was just tiny, tiny triangles. And if you were playing up in class, he'd make you wait behind and colour in each one individual colours. So you couldn't do just one colour. You had to do them all individually, and that was enough to say, right, I ain't going to piss about in his class.
But hey, anyway. So, ain't that a form of bullying, though? Making a kid write, you know, "I love Ajax."
Oh, well, we're gonna go down that route now, yeah? We're gonna go down that route. Crikey. Well, this isn't, you know, Yaya Toure. You can't give him a birthday cake. You know? Right, one more thing before we wrap up the show. I've got a few quick questions from the Facebook group page. Gentlemen, quick one from Mike Pieri. Has there ever been a wider gulf between teams chasing the title and those chasing top four?
I don't think there has that many points, 20 odd points. No. I'm sure that there might have been over the years, but you know, in gulf of class, I think they're a million miles away at the minute.
Okay, fair enough.
And Liverpool are only going to get stronger, and City probably are going to get stronger as well.
What do you reckon, Michael?
I agree. I mean, I think it at times, you know, it's men against boys, you know. In certain situations, I mean, it was, and no disrespect to your club boys, but when they played the Manchester Derby the other day, and he had to make changes, you could see he'd gone down, and he had to, I think, show the fans also that he was committed to try and be in that game, and he's rejinked the formation, and that was sort of mano a mano football, and you could see what happened. I mean, it was just. The quality was, there was a gulf of quality there. And I think it goes all the way down, not just Man United, but you can put all the other teams in the same category. You know?
Absolutely.
You can see what he's done in the last, like Michael said, he's switched and changed so many times because know, he just doesn't have faith in him. He just kind of done what Mourinho's done. He's like kind of picked the players that he could trust, and he's just not good enough.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. The next question comes again from Mike. He says, is Van Dijk worthy of the Player of the Year? Should awards wait until the end of the season? Voting happens in January and still using paper ballots. Is a change required?
I think they've always done it this way. It's tradition. I think, you know, is he rightly so? I think so, because he's totally changed from what Liverpool were last year and how many goals they conceded to what they are this year. Is just chalk and cheese, and that's why they're competing for the league. Just him alone from keeping that back four, because they're just when you know there's a player back there and that can control the back four and can do what he can do and be defensively solid and play. He does everything, and he just gives confidence for the players in front of him. So, you know, for me, definitely. But Raheem Sterling's a close second.
Mm. Okay, fair enough. Also, Mike Bolton, where next? Now, as you guys are probably aware, they haven't been paying their players, so games have been postponed. What happens? Because I know Bassini's the former Watford owner, or he had a majority share at Watford. He's interested in buying the club, but Ken Anderson is saying, well, you've got to prove that you're fit for purpose, which is a bit bizarre. Michael, have you ever seen anything like this before in your life? What's happening with Bolton?
Well, I mean, it's incredibly sad what's happening with Bolton. Have I seen it before? Yeah, I live in North America, in the old North American Soccer League. As players, you looked at the alphabet to see what your name was to get to the bank to cash a check. Because if you happened to be a Greek player, you probably didn't get paid. So
don't get paid in Greece either. Don't worry.
That's true. Good point. But no, I mean, in this day and age, given the money in the game, and yeah, the expenses in the game that cross over, but you know, it tells a terrible story of what the economics of football are. And it doesn't surprise me, but it's an incredibly sad situation.
Absolutely. Rod, do you think there's any way back for him?
Well, you know, I live 3 miles from the stadium, so you'd hope so, because, you know, I've got friends that are Bolton fans, and even though people don't like Bolton, you don't want to see a club like that. But it's at the minute, it's just a disaster. It's disastrous, and I don't know how these people getting in charge of these big clubs, and I just don't know. I don't know how they do it, and you know, for the staff not to be paid for, it's nearly 2 months now. It's just ridiculous, and I just don't know how it still keeps happening every year. So a different club every year, and until we eradicate it, until we get this problem sorted out, it's just going to continue to happen. And a normal person is going to suffer, who works, who's got to pay mortgages, relies on these wages. You know, they're not all footballers on 20, 30 grand a week. These people who rely on a monthly wage and live month to month and they're not being paid, and it's just a joke, to be honest.
Mm, that's right. Couple more quick ones, gents. Given how poor the bottom half dozen has been this season in the Premier League and how competitive the top of the Championship has been, including the big clubs, is there any merit in making relegation promotion 4 teams? Now, remember the Premier League's first season was 4 up, 4 yeah. down. I think that's a great idea, to be honest. What do you guys think?
I would think I would rather do it like the Scottish one, the fourth place.
Oh, they have a playoff.
They have a playoff winner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would work. That'd be great. That'd be fantastic. What do you reckon, Michael?
They do that in Germany, don't they?
Yeah, I think in Holland as well. They do in Holland. I don't know. A lot of the European leagues do that.
Yeah.
No, so that fourth team has still got a lifeline to stay in the Premier League, and the other team still got lifeline to get into the Premier League.
So how would it be, Rod? The top three go into the Premier League, and then the playoffs, and then whoever wins the playoff final plays the Premier League team that's full from bottom?
You'd still
want to have those teams in the Championship, you know, because I think that playoff format is incredibly exciting. But I do agree with Rod that fourth place Premier, you'd get another moment in time where it would be an incredible atmosphere, and I think the fans would really enjoy it.
That's right. And on a final note, should young player cutoff age be lowered? I think Raheem Sterling won it at 24. Should it be lowered?
Yes, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it should be 21 and lower.
Yeah, because you got under 21 tournaments and all that. Why does it have to be 24? It doesn't make sense. At 24, that's not young for a footballer, is it? I don't think so.
Well, no, you're probably a grown man then, are you? 24. You
know. Yeah, and shouldn't that be about the future, not the now? You know what I mean? It's about the player that shows capability and promise, and you want to follow their career. You don't want to say it's what they're doing, you know, now, and the fact that, oh, look at me, I'm 25, but I'm still in a category, or 24 in a category. I don't understand it. I don't know why they do it, but I would change it immediately.
Yeah,
he's matured massively as well, Raheem Sterling. And you know, he's not a young player anymore. He's a mature man, so you see that by his actions this year. You know, he's matured massively.
That's right. Yeah, and what would you do, mate? Would you lower it?
Yeah, lower it. 21 and under.
Yeah, I mean, you had Bernardo Silva there. I think he's also 24. I think Declan Rice is young. Rashford, Trent Alexander-Arnold, David Brooks. A lot of those players, the majority of them, were under 24, under 23 even. So I don't see why. I don't know. It is what it is. Anyway, that's it for this evening or this week. Gentlemen, Twitter handles, Jan?
Jan and Chris J.
Rod?
Rod James Giggs.
Mr. Finley?
And Finley at football.
Superb, fantastic. Well, that's it for us this week, guys. We're on Twitter @ShootTheDefence. So until next time, goodbye.